This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And I would say this is a pretty jovial post-draft podcast, at least from R2's perspective. Patriots had a hell of a draft, I think, here, at least on paper. We'll see what happens with all these guys once we get onto the field. But Adam, just quickly, your initial reaction to kind of what was, I think, the first 2 days they hit it out of the park.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember we were texting when it was going on, and I was just gushing about it. Like, yeah. Not only were these guys that we've covered previously for most of them, but, you know, they're guys we liked, like, early on in some of these podcasts. Like, Harry was, I think, one of the first receivers we touched on. Juwan Williams was one of the first corners we touched on. You know, Yodney was one of my favorite tackles in this draft.
Yep.
And even a guy like Damian Harris, who's, you know, a running back, and I didn't really think that was a need or whatever. He's a good player.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got you know, not somebody that's worn down with 6,000 carries in college.
I mean,
he's relatively fresh. He knows what it's like to play in a running back by committee. You know, I just thought that, you know, and the thing is that a lot of other people are saying this too, like national writers, you know, and evaluators, stuff like that, really love this draft for the Patriots.
Yeah. I was actually talking to Mike Giardi and Albert Breer down at Gillette on Saturday, and all of us were in agreement that everybody that we've spoken to are just talking about how great of a first 2 days the Patriots had, you know, and they were speaking to guys, you know, in the league too, that were all saying that as well. And I think that really, you know, we can get into some of these prospects now and kind of talk about it. But I think the biggest thing, just looking at the board, is the first five guys they got great value. Like, all these guys were picked where they should have been picked, and, you know, in a good range and kind of the consensus range. This wasn't one of those drafts, luckily, that we got like a Jordan Richards in the second round, for example. They had no surprises, really, in terms of value, in terms of guys that were supposed to be top 100 guys. And I don't really think they had any surprises overall until they got to the punter. So, you know, it really overall was one of those drafts where, for the first time, I think, in a long time that I can remember, that Belichick kind of went chalk. Like, these were big time contributors on big schools playing against good competition. And that, I think, was something that Nick Caserio said afterwards was kind of the theme of the draft for them. You know, they didn't want to draft any real small school guys and guys that weren't playing against NFL caliber talent, that they could scout directly against NFL caliber talent. And he pointed to Juwan Williams, you know, we talked about it in the podcast, playing against like AJ Brown and Miles Boykin and the guys in Georgia and stuff like that, where like they had tape of him playing well against NFL receivers, guys that were drafted this past weekend.
Nicole Hardman, guys like that.
So that's all great news. And one of those guys too that showed out, and this is really, I think, one of the surprises of the draft, was obviously N'Keal Harry right at the top.
Yeah.
First receiver in the Belichick era in the first round. I think everybody kind of had a hint that maybe a pass catcher was coming, but because of that history, I think most people were looking for a tight end, not a wide receiver at that spot.
Yeah, I think if you had asked people before that if Hockenson and Font were gone by 32 and if they were going to pick a pass catcher, you'd probably say, oh, like Irv Smith somewhere.
Yeah.
And then wait until the second or third round to get a receiver because it was so deep there and that, you know. But as it turned out, like, I think it was smart of them because, you know, that run on receivers did come.
Yeah, they started it kind of.
Yeah. So, and if the rumors are true that that Arizona was going to pick Harry with the next pick and they just really liked him, then, you know, of course, you know, go ahead. But, you know, I was shocked. You know, I didn't really expect them to go with a receiver, but, you know, in hindsight, it makes more sense.
Yeah, they actually, so, you know, basically everything that I've heard is that they had Harry and Juwan Williams as the two targets for them at 32. They almost picked Juwan Williams at 32. And then they got some intel that Arizona, which is Harry's hometown team, might pick him if they don't pick him at 32. Yeah. Might pick him with the first pick of the second round at 33. So Arizona ended up going elsewhere. But then right after that, like you said, San Francisco took Deebo Samuel. Right. AJ Brown went shortly after that. A couple of different receivers went just after that. So the kind of, like you said, the run of receivers started. And I don't think that was much of a surprise to anybody because there wasn't a ton of first round talent at receiver, but there was a ton of really good second round talent at the position. So I think that they knew, and everyone kind of knew, early second round was when a lot of those Deebo Samuels, AJ Browns, those are the type of guys that were going to go right then and there. So I think that's great. But just, you know, to get into kind of Harry's fit and, you know, how we like the player and stuff like that, I actually talked to his position coach today at ASU, Coach Fisher, which you can actually hear at the end of the podcast. We're going to tack it on to the end so you can listen to the audio of that, which was really a cool experience. And I think the first thing that he said, you know, I asked him, what was your first impression when you first met N'Keal Harry, you know, your first day on the job at Arizona State? And he just said, I mean, the first time you meet him physically, he's just an imposing dude. You know, he's monster. He's 6'3", 228 pounds. And he said, you know, the coaches, Herm Edwards is the head coach there, was describing him to Coach Fisher, Harry to Coach Fisher. And he said, I didn't even need anybody to tell me that it was N'Keal Harry, because just because of the physical being of him, he just kind of knew it was him because of how big he was.
Yeah, it's funny too. Like, he's got linebacker arms, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's massive in every way.
Yeah, and I think – I'm pretty sure he was like a five-star recruit coming out of high school.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's one of those guys you just look at and you say, yep, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, going into his game, I mean, we've talked about it, but, you know, and it's been discussed a lot, but, you know, if you're losing a red zone threat like Rob Gronkowski, you know, this – at you know, at that point was probably the best you were going to get in terms of that. You know, a guy who gets contested balls, who can, you know, who's 6'3 and can jump, you know, and out muscle guys for balls. And, you know, that's really the thing. And then, you know, also his fit, you know, in a short and intermediate passing game, somebody that can sort of, you know, turn a 10-yard completion into a 25 or 30-yard one. There's a lot of that on his film. And so it's really, you know, my only question is, how quickly he catches on to the offense, how they plan to use him early on. Because I mean, I think you really do have to use him pretty early, you know,
think they don't have much of a choice.
Yeah, they don't, you know, it's just such a thin position for them right now. So especially if there's an injury, you know, I think he's a really good fit. I think especially with Gronkowski retiring, he's somebody, the type of guy that you needed. And I think he's somebody that's going to play a lot early. And, you know, it might take him some time to build that trust with Brady and stuff like that. But a lot of the routes he runs and stuff like that can translate really quickly. And I think he's going to be good, like, on those back shoulder fades, too. He's going to be really good at that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, interestingly enough, I feel like the crash course that they had to give Josh Gordon last year gave them some optimism to make this pick a little bit because they're similar receivers. Now, Coach Fisher compared him to Anquan Boldin. And the reason why he did that was because in later part of the season at Arizona State last year, they started to play N'Keal more in the slot. And he was like them as a big slot receiver. And I think that that's really, you know, along with the contested catches, is really where we start to get into him being like kind of the de facto Gronk replacement without being a tight end. Because he's a guy that can work middle of the field. He's a guy that can get up, go up and get those 50-50 balls that Coach Fisher actually called 9-10 balls for N'Keal. And, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that that's, like, really optimistic. And, you know, I think that the only kind of hesitation that people might have, along with kind of the history of the Patriots, you know, developing receivers, which obviously is, you know, not the best. But I think that the big question that people have is, you know, he's not an elite separator on tape.
Right.
You know, a lot of the downfield stuff, you know, he there are guys around him when he's making those catches.
Right.
But at the same time, I think one of the rarest things about him is how kind of slippery and nifty he is in the open field.
Yeah.
At 6'3", 226 pounds, I think it was that he weighed in at the combine, there aren't a lot of guys that are that good after the catch at that size.
Right.
You know, a lot of guys that are like that are that big are explosive straight line after the catch guys.
Exactly.
That's like what Dez was. That's what Demaryius Thomas was. You know, those types of guys. Even Josh Gordon is kind of one of those guys that's just shot out of a cannon in a straight line. Nikhil can juke. Like, this guy's got quick feet and quick juking ability. He's got jump cuts. He's got tape where he's cutting, making five guys miss and then cutting across the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how much of that you want to do in the NFL level, but, you know, the point is that yak ability is there, and that fit in the offense is just tremendous. Now, I think the one, you know, kind of hesitation that I have with him is that I think that they're going to have to move him around to get him open. You know, like, I think there's going to have to be some sort of scheming involved, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, they certainly do that with Julian Edelman a whole lot. But I think the issue is that I don't want to take too much of the pre-snap motion away from Edelman and give it to Nikhil, but I also don't want to not give it to Nikhil. So that's up to Josh McDaniels. You know, that's something that he's going to have to figure out. But it would, I think, help Nikhil a whole lot at the NFL level to move him inside and outside, get him some pre-snap motion, because beating press coverage on the boundary was not necessarily one of his strengths in college.
Right. And I do think a couple things that I like about him too, his blocking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a beast there.
Very physical blocker.
And there is a lot of games, not a lot of games, but there are enough games that I saw looking back where teams were giving him a ton of attention and the ball wasn't coming his way, and Arizona State kept giving it to Eno Benjamin, the running back who's very good, who will be out in maybe next year, a couple of years. And so, like, there would be long stretches of the game where he wasn't getting the ball, but he wasn't loafing through those snaps.
No.
You know, and I think that's something that the Patriots really like, is, like, a guy who, you know, even when, you know, the ball's not coming his way or he might be a little frustrated, you know, I think the Washington game was one of those games where it was just not really – he wasn't really in a flow, but he kept blocking. He kept – you know, he would, you know, create spaces for other receivers. You know, it was, you know, he's one of those guys who has that full field, every snap effort that the Patriots totally love.
Yeah. And Coach Richard had mentioned that he practices that way too, that he's an ultra competitive player at practice and wants to get it right, is a very hard worker, which I don't think is any surprise to just watching him on tape. And I think the last thing, and we'll move on to Juwan, but one of the games that stood out to me was the Oregon game, where down the field, the Oregon corners were doing a really good job against him, and he really didn't have a whole lot of downfield catches in that game. But what Arizona State did was like, all right, we know if our offense is going to hum, we need to get Nikhil involved. And they started throwing him screen passes.
Yeah.
And he's so good on those. Like,
he really is.
He's elusive. He's explosive. That's part of the reason why he led the FBS in this class, at least in this draft class, in explosive plays, was because of those screens. So even if it's not going for him down the field, you run him on shallow crosses, you run him on screens, you run him on quick little hitches and stuff like that, where he can get the ball in his hands underneath. He can still make yards, even if he's not catching it 20, you know, the 20 plus yards down the field or anything like that. So I think that this is a really nice scheme fit for the Patriots, where a guy that can create after the catch and work the middle of the field, and they're going to have a field day with him and Edelman and all the different possibilities that they can do with those two, because they're so interchangeable, both of them. You know, I think that's like really what is it was so great about this pick, is that he can play both slot and on the outside and win in both situations. And that's going to be something that's going to be really exciting. The next pick for the Patriots obviously came at 45, is Juwan Williams. I keep saying Joe Juwan, but it's actually Juwan. Juwan Williams out of Vanderbilt. And, you know, just kind of related to the Nikhil Harry pick, a lot of people think Nikhil Harry is going to be a big slot in the NFL, a guy that's going to play a lot of slot reps. Juwan Williams might be the guy that's going to be matching up against those types of guys.
Yes.
The Patriots, you know, the other direction. So 6'4" corner, another just – these are two, and Nikhil Harry and Juwan Williams, two just like rare physical athletes, you know, just body type-wise and movement skill-wise.
Yeah. And like we were saying the first time around, is when he gets his hands on you and he gets a good, you know, when he gets a good, you know, man press,
yeah,
you know, on you and he gets his hands on you, you're almost done.
Yeah.
You mean, it's really hard to break off of that if you're, especially if you're a little bit smaller too. You have to really come with some, you know, heavy hand strength to knock him off. And so I think that's really just how they're going to try to use him, is have him beat up whoever's across from him at the line of scrimmage, use him on tight ends, use him on big receivers. You know, I don't necessarily want him covering, you know, one of these like little shifty guys like a Hollywood Brown. You know, that's a losing proposition for him, especially if that guy's off the line of scrimmage. But I also think, you know, he's not as bad I don't think his long speed is good, but I think, you know, his body size actually can make up for some of that sometimes, because, you know, he can get his hands in there even if he's a little beat.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the Patriots have a very specific plan in mind for him. And I think, you know, if in terms of a fit and in terms of value and where they got him, I think it was a really good pick.
Yeah, as soon as they made the pick, the comparison that I made was Brandon Browner and that kind of role. And now they have their Revis and Stephon Gilmore on the other side. So the ability of Juwan to play a man coverage is great. And you can also, what you can do is you can, you know, leave Gilmore like he was for a lot of last season on his island with whatever matchup you want to work there. You know, him versus the number one or him versus the number two, whatever way you want to go. And then you have Juwan on the other side with safety help over the top. And that accounts for the fact that he ran in the mid 4.6s, you know, and that's going to, you know, take away any of those deep throws, or it should take away any of those deep throws. You know, I think a lot of people when they made this pick too, and I think that there's going to be plenty of it, are saying, you know, Travis Kelce, you know, here's your guy, you know, that type of thing. If they face a big receiver, you know, around the league, there's a lot of them, you know, the 6'3", 6'4" guys, that here's your guy. I think the one point that you made about his length and his ability to kind of recover from out of phase with his arm length is a really good one, because he can be a step behind and his strides are so long and his arms are so long that he can disrupt the pass at the catch point, even if he is not in perfect position when the ball is thrown. So, you know, that's great. That I think that will be a great skill set. He's a good tackler. You know, he's a willing and capable tackler. And also just kind of talking to him and talking to, you know, people about him, it sounds to me like he is like a consummate pro. Like, this guy's really mature. He's already kind of got the Patriot way about him. He was at home when they made the pick, and he was in a suit. You know, like, that's like the kind of guy that he is.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that's, you know, all that kind of screams Patriots. You know, he said he loves to grind film, and he loves all that stuff. So all I hope is, and I'm sure that this will happen, you know, Stephon Gilmore talked a whole lot last year about studying other receivers, you know, and how key that was for him, you know, studying their releases, studying their moves at the top of the route, and like knowing going into games what exactly to expect. You know, those two start getting the film room together and really break down all these guys. They have all the physical upside in the world to be a really dynamic duo. Yeah. Now, before we move on to Chase, I just, you know, wanted to touch briefly on like kind of what this means, because it is a loaded position on the roster, you know, and what, you know, what do you think that this means for guys like JC Jackson, for example?
See, I mean, I feel like corner is a position that you can never have enough good guys at, you know, so
especially in this league now.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of, it's interesting because Keon Crossan has such good special teams value.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they want to get rid of that, because it's hard to find a guy that that good at that. And then there's Jonathan Jones, who I think is going to, you know, be on the team.
Yeah.
So and it's
Jason McCourty too. So.
Jason McCourty. It's a loaded room. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, cause I think JC Jackson had such a really promising rookie campaign. I don't know who the odd man out is there. It's definitely not Juwan, though, because, you know,
invested too highly in him.
Yeah, they really did. So, I mean, if they had picked him in the seventh round, maybe, but I really don't know how they're going to manage that, but it may be somebody from another position group comes off the roster. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing that, you know, kind of stands out to me as a possibility is just when you really think about it, like last year they were a very matchup based team. Like in the Super Bowl, Jason McCourty played a lot because they were playing more zone. And in the AFC Championship game, it was completely all J.C. Jackson. So if there's not a great matchup for Juwan, but there's a great matchup for J.C. Jackson, then I wouldn't be surprised if they just play J.C. Jackson in that game.
Right.
You know, and eventually I think the hope is probably that Juwan's going to develop into a corner that you don't take off the field. But at least for his rookie season, I think that that's pretty acceptable. There's obviously also the possibility that they kick J.C. inside to the slot. And I think that
that makes sense.
Even though I think that, you know, his style is best suited for the boundary because he's such a good press corner. I think he's got the quickness and the speed to play in the slot too. Like, I don't think that he'd have a problem with that. And I don't think that they're moving Juwan Williams to safety. I really don't.
Neither do I.
I really think the plan is to play him at corner because even though like he might cover tight ends or something like that at some point, like, is Travis Kelce really a tight end? Is these guys are big receivers at this point. Zach Ertz, Travis Kelce. So those types of guys are, you know, matchup players, you know, guys that you're going to put a matchup on. So I think that he's staying at corner. He played mostly boundary at Vandy and played it pretty well. So I wouldn't really play with it too much. If you want to watch a game of his, if people, you know, want to kind of do their own study of him, go watch him against Ole Miss. That's my suggestion because he basically put the straps for four quarters on A.J. Brown. Every single time he was lined up across from A.J. Brown, caught some balls against some other guys in that game. They kind of moved him around and got him away from Juwan Williams a little bit. But when he was matched up against A.J. Brown, he really took him out of the game. And A.J. Brown had a lot of trouble with him. And that's a receiver that in A.J. that I, you know, have a lot of respect for. I think is a really good player. So go watch him against him. Go watch him against Miles Boykin in Notre Dame, too. He did a really good job against Miles Boykin, which is kind of a foreshadowing, I think, of the bigger type of receivers that he's going to, you know, face and go up against in the NFL. All right. Number 77, probably the most predictable pick, I would say, other than maybe Juwan Williams because there's such late buzz about him going to the Patriots. But Chase Winovich is just a Patriot through and through. You know, we can talk about the hair and the off field, but we don't do that too much on this podcast. We're really talking about the football. So, I mean, we loved him to begin with, but, you know, what do you love so much about him again?
Well, I not only do I love him as a player, but, like, if you look at where he was taken and how many people, you know, who watched Michigan – we're like, this is the better player than Rashawn Gary.
Everybody that has a clue that watched Michigan last year can tell you that.
Every single person. And so, and you look at where Rashawn Gary, where was Gary picked? 9, 10?
Yeah.
So if you're getting a guy who's better than that and also who killed the combine and whose film is ridiculous. Okay. So he's an inch or two short.
Yeah.
He's a little light in the pants. I don't care.
Yeah.
This kid is the he's a football player, man.
Yeah.
And he is relentless. He like his pad level and like his jump off the snap. I mean, it's all exactly what you want. He dominated, man. Even in games where they got killed or not got killed, but even in games where they didn't do well, like he was there. Like you can watch a Michigan game and be like, where's Rashawn Gary? You can't watch a Michigan game and say, where's Chase Winovich?
Yeah. And that's putting it perfectly. He also shows out against the pass and the run. Like he's going to rush the passer and he's going to defend the run at a high level. He is a guy that at 6'2", 256, I think is more like a weak side player. Like I think that is best used away from the tight end, which is what he played in at Michigan for the most part, because Gary was on the strong side because Gary's certainly the more physical player in terms of like being able to take on a double team and stuff like that. But this guy, I mean, he ran, I think it was a 4.56 at 256 pounds.
Yeah.
So he can fly. And he flies and he tries 110%. So that combination is a really fast player. I also think that, you know, just from a technique standpoint, you mentioned the pad level. His hand usage is excellent. Yeah. He has a bunch of different pass rush moves that he uses, and he's always active with his hands and kind of weeding through the mess against the run, which I think is great. He makes a lot of plays like chasing down the running back from behind.
100%.
Because he goes, you know, in that type of role on the weak side as like a weak side on the ball linebacker, they don't always block you when you're away from the run strength of the formation. So when he's on the other side, they're trying to run it towards the tight end and they're not worried about the backside, but here comes that 4, 5, 6 speed and the great instincts coming off the ball. And there he is getting the football. I mean, this guy, I think, is just a perfect fit. And I think everybody thinks that, honestly. Like, I haven't heard one person say that this is a bad pick because, you know, at 77, I mean, it's just, I think it's crazy that he fell this far.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that it kind of was just, this was such a loaded edge class and you know, defensive line class that at some point somebody was going to fall. You know, it kind of had to be somebody. And I think that he was just one of those guys that kind of fell into that. And I also think that, you know, just from a team standpoint, all these guys that we've talked about so far and the guys that we're going to talk about tonight are guys that fit the mold of a Patriot type player in the locker room.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not just talking about personality. I mean, like, guys that are going to work, guys that are going to work their tails off, and guys that are going to, you know, football is life for them. And, you know, that in a good way, you know, obviously they have other interests in that as they should, but football is life for them in a good way. And I think the biggest thing though is, you know, important to remember that I don't think that he is like the next Rob Ninkovich. Like, I think he's a different type of player than that. You know, I think that he's, you know, in Michigan, he played what he called it, the designated pass rusher role. He called it the cheetah one, which is, you know, essentially always on the weak side. Ninkovich and those guys were playing strong side end. You know, those are guys that were taking on double teams and playing in the trenches. This guy, you're going to want him in a two-point stance. You're going to want him away from the tight end, away from the run strength, and you're going to want to just let him run. And get after guys, which is going to be great, I think. You know, a lot, they needed to replace some of that pass rush that Trey Flowers left with. They have Michael Bennett, who can play more in between the tackles, and now they have Chase Winovich, who can play kind of on the outside.
Yeah, I think this is the next generation of pass rusher here.
Yeah.
For the Patriots. I mean, when they lost Flowers and they got Bennett, I was like, okay, but who's the young guy?
Yeah.
I think this is the young guy.
Yeah, and they tried this with Derek Rivers, and you know, I still have hope for Derek Rivers. You know, he's kind of another like athletic, undersized, you know, lighter guy. You know, that's more just like a pass rush specialist type guy. But I think Chase plays the run too well to call him that. I really do. So I really like that pick. I think everybody kind of puts a check next to that one. All right, the next one here at 87 was Damian Harris, the running back from Alabama. And I think this one, out of all the picks that they made besides the punter, was kind of the biggest, you know, one in contention. Obviously, you just drafted Sony Michel in the first round a year ago. We all love Sony. They have Rex Burkhead. They have James White. Why a running back, I think, is a question that a lot of people are asking. But I think both of us are in agreement that if it had to be a running back in this spot at 87, they got a pretty good one here.
They definitely did. And also, it just reinforces that thing where it's not always about need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes they just like a guy.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's the case, then you pick them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't always have to go by need. You can reinforce a strength because who knows with an injury here or whatever.
Right.
You know, this is a talented dude, man. I mean, this is another one of these guys where if he came out last year, you know, everybody had him in their first round.
Yeah.
Or at least second round. And again, this is another one of these guys. He's an Alabama guy who is in a three-pronged backfield. So he wasn't carrying the ball 25 times a game.
Big point.
You know, and I think in, you know, drafting today, there are more of those types of backfields today. But, like, if you want to get a guy to, you know, that second contract and, you know, avoid injuries and stuff, you want a guy with, you know, with a career like that in college. You know, even though he did play a while, he just didn't have, like, I think the stat was, you know, 19 games of 10 or more carry, but he didn't have a single 20 carry game his entire college career. And he's somebody that clearly is accustomed to sharing carries. So it's not like he's going to come in, become frustrated that Sony's still the guy or that James White is getting those third down reps. He's just going to come in, he's going to work, and then, you know, when his shot comes, I mean, this guy has been a stud at every level. He was also another one of these guys that even before college was a blue-chip prospect.
Yeah.
So
you don't get to Alabama if you're not.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, he was a no-brainer his entire career, and he's coming in fresh.
Yeah, I think that that's the best point of it all, is that he was in the backfield with Bo Scarborough, Derrick Henry, Kenyon Drake, you know, some really good backs at Bama that went on to play in the NFL. Obviously, Josh Jacobs, too, this year, this past season. And not once did he complain about carries. And when I talked to him at the combine, I asked him that question because I'm thinking it from a Patriots perspective. I'm like, if the Patriots do draft this guy, and I kind of had an inkling based off his running style because he reminded me enough of some of the guys that they've gone for in the past. Actually, it reminds you like a little bit of Sony. And I said, you know, how did you handle like, you know, that situation where you're sharing carries with Jacobs and you're sharing carries with Kenyon Drake and that competitive, you know, environment on your own team? And he said, you know, it wasn't a competition because all of us just wanted to win. So, you know, whatever it took to win, whether that week it was me or this week it was Josh or whatever the case may be, whoever was giving us the best chance to win that week is who we went with. And everybody kind of just understood. And I was like, that's tells me that that's like the Bama program and Nick Saban being similar to the Patriots and Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
You know, those are two old friends, like kind of having a similar outlook on how things should work. And right. that, and they kind of look for the same types of players that like that too. So the fact that he has been in a committee, and before you go ahead and say, well, you know, Sony's going to get upset, don't forget that Nick Chubb was a pretty big deal at Georgia too. And then obviously last year, you know, Sony was sharing the workload with James White. So Sony's so used to it too. And, you know, this is a situation where you can keep everybody fresh. You can rotate guys in and out. Damien Harris in particular, though, I think that the first couple of things that stand out are great vision between the tackles. This is a guy that can really run between the tackles. And he's got great contact balance, you know, running through arm tackles, that kind of stuff, and staying on his feet and staying balanced and explosive. And I actually think, and, you know, this is something that we'll have to wait and see, because in the college game, Sony looked the same, and you know, in the NFL game, he looked a little bit slower. But he has some good build-up speed. You know, once he gets rolling, and Bama threw a lot of like little screens and dump off passes to him and stuff like that, where he wasn't running routes like way down the field and stuff. He's not going to be James White and start running yards, you know, these big corner routes or anything like that. But he can pick up yards in the passing game too, if you throw him the ball, and he's a pretty reliable pass catcher too. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing though, from a wire running back standpoint, is that this is just offense. You know, like, so it's not a pass catcher, so it's not a tight end, so it's not a wide receiver, but Damien Harris is going to bring offense to the Patriots. Like, he's going to bring production. He's going to bring another guy, another kind of matchup guy that other teams have to worry about when they're getting ready for the Patriots. You're not going to want to sleep on this guy. So I think that's really good news.
My only drawback with Harris, I mean, it's not too big, but I don't see him as like a home run hitter.
No, definitely.
Like Sony was like a guy that you feel like could take it to the house from further out. You know, Harris is one of those guys that'll turn 5 into 10, maybe 15, not 30, 50. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but again, like some of these Bama guys, they're just well rounded because they, you know, that's another good screen team, you know, and you know, that offense is pretty pretty balanced. It's, you know, everything about Alabama right now is like NFL ready. It's like a, you know, it's not just a factory talent wise, but like how they get their guys ready. They always seem pretty polished by the time they get out there.
Yeah, and he's, you know, a guy also at Bama that was in a game plan offense. So he told me, I asked him, I was like, you know, what were you running behind most of the time, you know, gap scheme or zone schemes? And he said, we did both because it was just based on the opponent. You know, if it was best for us to run zone that week, we ran zone. If the next week it was best to run more man blocking stuff, then we ran that. And I was like, oh, that's good news, because that's exactly what's going to happen when you get here. So, you know, he's one of those guys too that, you know, they were game plan offense, and this just, you know, it almost kind of makes you wonder why they don't take more guys from Bama, because they a lot. I mean, I think the defensive side of the ball is different, but on the offensive side of the ball, not a lot of college teams are game plan college. You know,
definitely not
the teams that are really doing that. They're doing what they do, and it's like, you know, Novocaine. Like, eventually, it's going to work, right?
Right.
And that's not the case with the guys at Bama. All right, at 101, still just rolling along with good players and good picks here. They got Yadni Kajust out of West Virginia, the tackle. Obviously, he protected Will Grier's blind side last year. There are some injury concerns. He had a torn ACL. He had a torn quad, missed some time in his college career. But on the tape, he was a guy that I had as like a late second round pick.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, again, I wouldn't have been mad at if they took him at 32. I think he's I think he's a really good football player, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch a lot of that West Virginia tape. I mean, the thing I like about him the most, obviously, is how athletic he is, man.
Yeah.
He, like, I don't think you're going to beat him with too many speed rushers. I think he's a strong guy with his hands. I think he's a great ball of clay that Dante Scarnecchia can mold a little bit. You know, I think, to have him as sort of a backup swing tackle this year and then learn the ropes a little bit is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think, you know, just watching him play, I just didn't see him get beat a lot. You know,
I didn't allow a sack all last year. So
yeah, I mean, we watched a ton of tape on him, and like, I just felt like, you know, if you can get a guy that's that big and athletic, you want him on the edge, and he can. I think he's, you know, and you know, I read that, you know, he's not real experienced at football.
Yeah,
you know, he only played what, 1 year of high school.
Yeah.
So again, you know, this is another guy that is not even close to as good as he's going to be, and he's already pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good point. And N'Keal Harry played a lot more in high school, but N'Keal Harry is only 20, 21 years old. He's a true 3-year guy in college. So that, you know, these younger guys, that means, you know, that they have that much more runway to kind of, you know, use in their NFL careers. And I think that, you know, the swing tackle thing is 100% it. I think that in a catastrophic world here, if Isaiah Wynn, a doomsday world, Isaiah Wynn doesn't work out or isn't ready to go or anything like that, you know, I know he's only a third round pick, and putting him at left tackle sounds like a scary proposition, but I think that he could play left tackle in a pinch if they really needed him to.
I think so,
and
too.
And that's like kind of the depth that you get out of him. I agree with all the, you know, scouting things that you said about him in terms of his explosiveness out of his stance and his foot speed and his hands, very heavy and well-rounded hand usage and a good upper body strength. You know, this is a guy that didn't get asked to run block a whole lot, but when he did, he moved people. You know, he was moving guys in the run game as well. I think actually, you know, just kind of looking at his skill set and also looking at it through the lens that hopefully Isaiah Wynn is the left tackle of the future, and he does just slide right in there, no problem. I think as a right tackle, Marcus Cannon, future Marcus Cannon replacement, I think there's a very good chance that that could be Yadni Kajust. You know, and in this league now, you need your right tackle to be almost just as good as your left tackle, because all these teams have multiple pass rushers that they just flip back and forth all game long. So, yeah, you know, you could be facing, you know, the Houston Texans, for example, and on one side is J.D. Clowney, on the other side is J.J. Watt. Well, you got to have guys that can block both. So, right, you know, they face the Chargers in the playoffs, and they have Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. So you have both sides of the coin there. So I think that, you know, this league, it's all about really, and I think this is really hammers home a lot of these picks, it's all about pass protection, quarterback, pass catchers, corners, pass rushers. All about passing, right? Like that. And they picked a wide receiver. They picked a couple of tackles or a couple of offensive linemen, and they picked a corner. You know, and that I think just makes a whole lot of sense from that standpoint. And I think that he has a chance to actually start at right tackle, and if, you know, need be at left tackle, but hopefully at right tackle. And now, you know, to get into kind of Yelda Froholt too a little bit here, they have an insane amount of depth on the offensive line. And yeah, I know a lot of people are like, they don't really need all these offensive linemen. I disagree. I think you need all the offensive linemen that you can get.
Yeah, you're in trouble. Like, especially on the interior, man, like, you're in trouble if you lose it, like, a really quality player. Like, that's a really – I mean, because, you know, look at what happens to your interior run game. Look at what happens if, you know, you have a guy that's not that good going up against, you know,
Chris Jones.
You got Chris Jones, like Ndamukong Suh. You're
look at the, just the other teams in the AFC East now. You have to worry about Quinn Williams. You have to worry about Ed Oliver. 100%. You have to worry about Christian Wilkins. I mean, that's another thing here, too, is I think the Patriots are one of those teams that looks at their schedule and looks at the players that they're going to have to face down the road and looks at, like, let's say they're going to have to play Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. Even it, looking ahead to maybe a potential rematch with the Rams and Aaron Donald in the Super Bowl, like 100%. you got to be ready for those guys. You got to have the bodies to be ready for those guys. And I think one of the more valuable players on the team in terms of backups and not obviously the main guys has been Ted Karras over the last couple of years, because he can play all three spots in the interior. And every single time David Andrews or Shaq Mason, Joe Tooney's been Mr. Durable over there and never misses a snap. But every single time David Andrews or Shaq Mason missed a game here or there or missed a few snaps with an injury, Ted Karras would step in and they wouldn't skip a beat. And that kind of just, that ability, that depth there is, I know a lot of people want to make it about Dante Scarnecchia, but it's not just about Scar. Scar is fantastic. We all love Scar, but it's also about the players. And having guys like Yelda Froholt and Yadi Kajust, I think, is just massive depth. It's going to be great. And I think that Yelda, just to touch on him briefly, is a guy that I think has the potential to start maybe at left guard after if they let Joe Tooney leave in free agency after next year because he gets paid elsewhere after they, I don't know if they're going to pay both Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney, big time guard money. So if they don't do that, I think Yelda Froholt has a chance to play guard and start in the league too as a high level pass protector. But the guy that I really wanted to talk to you about was Jared Stidham, because I know that all of his history, and kind of the checkered past that he's had, just to kind of walk us through it here. I mean, he started at Baylor, step one, and then obviously transfers to Auburn and goes from there after the whole Baylor program kind of went up in flames.
Yeah. It's hard because there's a few things that make it difficult to evaluate this guy. Okay. Like for starters, I mean, that offense is so unique. Yeah. It's not a normal offense. They come out they come out and have the right tackle play slot receiver on. So, I mean, it's like a spread wing T single wing type thing,
It's drunk is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So in that respect, it's like, all right, well, what can this guy do with the Patriots offense? And then, then you look at this year, and Auburn's kind of like this in general, but this past year they just fell apart so badly. Like, and it was such a team-wide thing that you can't really – like, his numbers dropped and his play dropped a little bit, but it's also like, how much can you blame that on him and how much of it was just a whole bad team?
There's a lot of bad situation.
Yeah, so, I mean, that happens every other year with Auburn, and then they'll have, a national championship year. it's so weird.
They get Cam Newton, and they win a national championship.
Right, they're very bipolar.
Yeah.
So, But when he was at his best, man, I think he was okay. The only thing that really worries me is that sometimes in that offense, like you said, there's times where the guys are schemed super wide open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And his – down to down, throw to throw accuracy didn't really impress me.
No, it's bad.
So I think the one thing that, I threw out that thing about him facing the 11 top 30 pass efficiency defenses his 2 years at Auburn. And even when he's played bad games, he didn't really turn the ball over that much.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what the Pats see. They see a guy who's got some tools. He's a decent athlete.
Yep.
And so maybe he can, maneuver around the pocket a little bit. And I also think they might have seen something in him and said, okay, in that offense, he's average. But, maybe if we get to work with him a little bit and take him into our roles, then, we can turn him into something better. And I think at where they picked him, that's not, a terrible thing.
Yeah, I think, that was perfect. I think that really the thing is that, when you look at that Auburn offense, I think ideally they would have a more mobile quarterback than Jared Stidham, and kind of just to use comparisons from this draft, a lot of those systems that are kind of just wonky like that open everything up for the quarterback, like, you know, at Oklahoma, for example, or Cliff Kingsbury is, you know, kind of the, another poster child of those offenses. They want to play 11 on 11. Like, they want the quarterback to be a factor with his legs.
Yeah.
And Jared Stidham is a decent athlete, but I think that he's more of a decent athlete within the design. Like, if you're going to ask him to roll out, or if you're going to ask him to move the pocket, or if, like, you're going to ask him to take, like, a few steps outside the pocket to his left or right and make a throw on the move, he's pretty good like that too. But he's not like Kyler Murray, for example, where he's, like, electric with his legs. And that's the type of quarterback that Gus Malzahn, I think, ultimately wants in that offense. So he wasn't that. Then you also, you know, kind of put into the fact that in 2018, he lost a lot of his supporting cast from the year before. Guys like Kerryon Johnson, for example, moved on to the NFL. And the supporting cast around him, the receivers, really didn't do him any favors. There were a ton of drops. There were a ton of, you know, bad routes and just bad moments from that Auburn offense as a whole, you know, just along with Jared Stidham, but as a whole offense. I asked Nick Caserio about how the Patriots evaluate old tape versus current tape, because he's the type of guy that if you turn on 2017, he's one player, and then you turn on 2018 and he declined. And he said that, you know, you take what happened the most recently and you look at that as kind of the most vital part of your evaluation, but you kind of look at that old tape and, like, if a player was better in past years, he says, you know, that's like peak performance tape. Like, that's like, you know, if it all comes together and everything works out, that that's who the player that he can turn out to be. And I think that that's, like you said, kind of what the Patriots are hoping, is that if they can get 2017 or even the Baylor version of Jared Stidham,
like,
that guy in those two situations was thought of as maybe the best quarterback in this class at one point in time. He's got the NFL arm. You know, he's got a really good arm in terms of not in terms of accuracy, but in terms of arm strength and ability to push the ball into NFL windows and all that kind of stuff. He takes care of the ball relatively well, although, like, last year under pressure, it all kind of became a disaster and he threw up a lot of passes that could have been picked off. But I think against behind a good offensive line like he's going to get in New England, with a good supporting cast, with a running game that he can rely upon, you know, maybe there's things to go here, you know, places for him to go here. And I the guy that I compared him to, not playing style-wise, but just talent level in the same talent pool, is more like a Jacoby Brissett. You know, like a guy
that's good.
You know, he's not Jimmy Garoppolo, but he's also not Danny Etling. You know, he's really like a guy like that. And I think that, you know, even though Jacoby Brissett's probably not going to be a long-term starter in the league, he was at least worth the flyer, you know? Yeah. Like, he was at least worth the pick and worth getting in the building and seeing what he can do. And I think that the same goes for Stidham. And you know, the accuracy is what really worries me. There's a couple of people that said to me, well, isn't it kind of like golf? Like, if your wedge game isn't very good, you just practice your wedge game a lot and it, like, eventually comes to you. And it's like, most of the time, if you're not accurate, you're not accurate.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you can improve, you can tweak mechanics. Like, there are a few mechanical things with his release and maybe his back foot that they can, like, tweak a little bit. But, like, he kind of is who he is in terms of accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for most people, too. And, like, I kind of feel like this is another one of those picks where he was in a lot of games that they were scouting anyway. Like, he's in so many big games. Like, think of, like, and maybe they maybe graded him on a curve a little bit because of the secondaries he was facing.
Yeah.
Even the non-league games, they played non-league against Clemson, where he was attacked from that defensive line and sacked a bunch of times. He played non-league against Washington secondary this year. You know, that's another, you know, NFL player.
Yeah.
You know, LSU, Alabama, Georgia, you know, a lot of those games he didn't play well, but I mean, he beat Alabama and Georgia in 2017. You know,
that Alabama game is kind of like, if you want to watch a game, you know, I'm kind of saying that for every prospect, like that Alabama game in 2017 is like, you know, if you can get that guy, like, you might actually have something. Worth the flyer, you know, see what happens. Certainly not a guy that I think is going to, you know, give Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not going to be looking over his shoulder too much at Jared Stidham, but, you know, at least a guy that if they can develop him and work with him, you know, I think that, you know, he could potentially go places. All right, is there anybody else from the draft class? I know we wanted to touch briefly on the undrafted guys that stood out to you that you wanted to mention.
Well, out of the undrafted guys, the guy I know the most about, who I haven't Well, I mean, I love the NC State guy they got.
Yeah.
Remember, we were talking about him a bunch when we were evaluating Ryan Finley.
Yep.
Jacoby Myers, it is, right?
Yep.
But out of the undrafted guys, the guy I know the most about is obviously Nick Brissett, the running back out of LSU. And to me, he seems like one of those guys, like a Brandon Bolden type, who could come in. He's actually from the same – they're both from Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys that can come in and possibly make the team on special teams.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they have a lot of guys on special teams already who are probably going to make the team.
Yeah.
But this is a guy who's got that kind of like he mostly played on special teams until his last year at LSU. He's, you know, behind guys like Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis, where he was never going to get on the field.
You know?
So he – But then, you know, his final year, you know, he played well. You know, he rushed for over 1,000 yards and, you know, was sort of a versatile guy. He can play on any special teams unit. You know, smart, good character, you know, really good character. He's a guy that, you know, if they want somebody who can, you know, sort of be a, you know, a glue guy, you know, and sort of like, you know, a special teams specialist, if you want to put it like that, he's somebody that can make the team that way. But if you're going to talk about pure talent and guys that you're like, wow, can't believe he didn't even get drafted, was, you know, it's going to be Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, Jacoby Myers and Malik Gant, and I'll talk about one of those two in a second. But before I forget, Adam, the Celtics killed the Bucks game one, did they not? I mean, that was like, I know I was enjoying that, sitting on my couch watching more game film of Patriots draftees and watching the Celtics kick ass. So if you feel good enough about the Celtics, like a lot of people do right now, I don't know about the Bruins. They're kind of, you know, maybe you don't want to place a wager on the Bruins, but the Celtics, I think a lot of people are on board with right now. There is only one place to get in on all the action. Grab the odds and allow the experts at betonline.ag to do the heavy lifting for you. Sports, live betting, virtual casino, you name it. BetOnline.ag is CLNS Media's preferred sports book online. If you're feeling lucky and like to support our podcast, go to clnsmedia.com/pats22 and use the promo code CLNS50 for that 50% signing bonus. That's CLNS50. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. I'm getting a little bit better at that every single time.
Yeah, you're crushing it, man.
Yeah. But I think the Jacoby Myers now, but I do want to mention Byron Cowart from Maryland.
Yeah.
Who was another one of those guys kind of like Stidham, who kind of his career arc kind of like got off the tracks a little bit there.
Yeah.
He actually went to Auburn originally, and then transferred to Maryland. And when he transferred to Maryland, they had him put on a ton of weight to play on the interior of the defensive line. But he was actually a five-star recruit out of high school, very highly recruited guy out of high school, that came in as like a pass rush specialist, like
yes,
a guy that could really rush the passer and get after it. Then at Maryland, he bulked up to like almost 300 pounds and became more of like a physical presence, you know, like a guy that was going to stop the run and beat up guys in the interior. So I'm very interested to see, you know, there's a lot of physical upside there with Cowart for a fifth round pick. So I'm interested to see what they do with him and exactly. And if they ask him to stay at his current weight or try to get him back to that Auburn weight and see if they can unlock like more of like a defensive end, or if they actually keep him at this weight. I think if they keep him at this weight, he's kind of a nice like strong side defensive end option for them, because you know the Patriots are going to want that guy to hold up against the run a little bit. So you know, I think he's a rotational piece potentially down the road. And got a punter battle. I mean, I wouldn't be thrilled about the punter, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think anybody really was, but
yeah. And you know, I think the thing about fifth round picks, not to get into a whole analytics discussion here, but according to the math, according to the nerds, a fifth round pick is the same in the NFL draft as a seventh round pick. The success rate is exactly the same from rounds 5 through 7. Basically all of day three is like, you know, flyers. We're taking lottery tickets.
Oh my god.
And so in the fifth round, a lot of teams like the Patriots don't value those picks a whole lot. So a guy like Byron Cowart, who got picked in the fifth round, or a guy like Juwan Bentley, who got picked in the fifth round, they might have actually looked at those guys as more like fourth round values. And so the fact that they got them in the fifth round was like a bonus. That's why they took a player there. Otherwise, they've used that on guys like Joe Cardona, Matthew Slater, now Jacob Bailey. They've used it as trade bait. They've traded those picks for veteran talent. So they don't really look at those picks as like that high of value pick. So that part of it, whether you like it or not, their system, their math, their nerds tell them that it's not really that big of a deal in the fifth round, because that pick is just as valuable as a seventh round pick. With that said, this punter can punt.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's not a scrub. Like, no. This guy can definitely punt. He can punt. He's a kickoff specialist. He ran like a 4.7 at the combine. Yeah. So he's like got a little bit of speed to him. I'm not advocating too often for any trick plays with the punt team.
Yeah.
But, you know, once a season, you know, it's always good to have something, some surprise up your sleeve like that when you really need it. So, you know, you never know. I think my point is as good as Ryan Allen punted in the Super Bowl, I think he's got some competition on his hands.
Yeah.
So,
never a bad thing.
No. I thought it would be a kicker.
Me too.
Yeah, that was my only thing. Like, maybe Cole Tracy from LSU or the Utah kicker that got drafted.
I would have been so happy if it was Cole Tracy.
Yeah.
I would have done backflips.
Yeah, but whatever. The UDFAs, though, I haven't studied the tight end yet. Beck from Texas, I think it is. He's apparently got a little bit of buzz. I think it's mostly just because he's a tight end and they didn't draft one. And they picked him as an undrafted. But Jacoby Myers is the guy, and Malik Gant to the safety. I think both of those guys were guys that I expected to get drafted, and was pretty surprised to see them get to that point. And it actually kind of puts into perspective, I think, a little bit of why they took Ken Webster at 252 instead of Jacoby Myers. I think that they thought that Webster might get drafted, and they knew Jacoby wasn't going to get drafted. This is basically what I'm, you know, saying is this is their second receiver in this draft is Jacoby Myers.
Yes.
You know, this is their Braxton Berrios of this draft, or whatever sixth or seventh round comparison you want to give to it. He is not the fastest guy, but he is a very physical, big slot receiver that can kind of move around the formation and do a whole lot of different things. He's very good at the top of the route of using that body and that bit thick frame to kind of bounce off guys and create separation that way. He's a smart guy. He's a converted quarterback. I'm sure people will like to hear that. So he can kind of run routes like a quarterback and get open against different types of coverages pretty well. And that NC State offense, I mean, Kelvin Harmon went in the sixth round, which was just absolutely shocking
to
me. And the NFL wasn't as high on the NC State offense as the internet was. That's basically kind of the end discussion of it all. And maybe, you know, they actually might have gotten a steal with Jacoby Myers as an undrafted. Malik Gant, I think also the rumor is that the NFL wasn't thrilled about his size, but he has got plenty of thickness. He's, you know, his weight is fine. He's just a little bit on the shorter side. I think he's like a little bit over 5'11", which isn't really that short. But anyways, he's the type of guy that didn't test very well at the combine, which I think is the biggest thing. He really tested poorly across the board and everything. And at that position, you got to be a good athlete. I think the good news is they liked Malik Gant and they didn't take him in the second round.
Right.
They got him as an undrafted guy. No. And he's like a guy that I think plays faster than he tested at the combine and can really kind of move. And he's very physical run defender. He's a box safety. And maybe has a chance. I mean, that's a lowered position on the roster. So I don't know how much of a chance he has, but I think Jacoby Myers has a really good chance to make the roster.
Yeah.
Like, I think that he's going to impress some people in camp and maybe have a chance to push like guys like Braxton Berrios or Bruce Ellington or Mo Harris or all those types of guys at the back end of the depth chart, for a roster spot. But, that was like an hour plus of talking there. So that thanks for hanging with us this long. If you have, we are going to put, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, my interview with, Coach Fisher from Arizona State, who is N'Keal Harry's wide receivers coach at ASU last year. He just gushed over him, Adam, for like 20 minutes. Like, just like how great of a kid he is on top of how great of a football player he is. A lot of really cool kind of coaches talking about his, where he was playing, what kind of routes he was running, and also just kind of the type of guy that the Patriots got there at 32. And I think the people at Arizona State are just like really excited that Bill Belichick thought that he was that good, you know.
Yeah.
And like, we're pretty kind of like honored almost that one of theirs was drafted by the Patriots. Is there anything that you want to plug?
No, not really. I still got some stuff to work on this week. So I'm going to get a little bit of creative because all the spring practices are over and stuff like that.
Yep.
I got to swing by Harvard, their spring game. They have a running back actually named Aaron Shamplin, who's going to be a junior, obviously not going to leave early or anything like that.
Yeah.
From Long Beach Poly, really fast.
Yeah,
like every Poly kid.
Yeah,
I know, but he's put on some weight, shifty, and somebody there told me that earlier in the spring he ran like a 4.53. Last year he separated really well once he got into the open field. I'm curious to see how he develops this year, and as long as they sort of figure out the quarterback situation, they might be pretty good.
Yeah, and for those that don't know Long Beach Poly and just Long Beach in general, birthplace of John Ross, Deshaun Jackson.
Willie McGinnis.
That Long Beach is quite the hotbed for football prospects. And like you said, they don't build them slow there.
No.
All those guys can flat out fly.
Yeah, so. I read a book about there was a game between Poly and De La Salle like in 2001.
Oh man.
And there was that saying that they said there's speed and then there's Poly speed out there. Yeah. And you're talking about Los Angeles, everybody's fast, but you know, Poly had that different level.
Yeah, there's that place in Florida too that I'm blanking on that is like known for developing guys with great speed too. But yeah, it's a hotbed for sure. For me on CLNS Media, obviously have the Coach Fisher thing that you guys are going to listen to here shortly. And then I'm going on vacation. So I'll see everybody in like 10 days. But Adam and I will be back when I get back from vacation. We'll do something. We'll keep busy here on the podcast until training camp starts up in July. We got OTAs when I get back, and there's media access to a few of those at the end of May. And then mini camps in June. You know, Tom Brady will be there. So, we're not like that far away from football. You know, it does feel like it, but you know, it's coming up pretty quickly here. I mean, also just, you know, quickly, it's going to be pretty cool for OTAs and minicamp, you know, to see this draft class. You know, this is the first time that we're going to see all those guys on the field and see them in Patriots uniforms. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, little things about N'Keal Harry, certainly. I mean, I don't know if we're going to be able to report too much on his usage quite yet, but we can certainly talk about it, the routes and stuff like that he's been running and you know, how he's going with Tom Brady once Tom Brady shows up at minicamp. But until a few weeks, we're going to take a little bit of break here, but we'll be back shortly. So be on the lookout for Adam Kirchen. I'm Evan Lazar. You're going to hear my interview with Coach Fisher next. Nice.
Yeah, shoot it at me. How can I help you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're all really excited, obviously, to have N'Keal here.
Sure.
He's the first receiver Coach Belichick's ever taken in the first round.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. But I just wanted,
absolutely.
Yeah, just wanted to start with you coached him just last year, correct?
I had him 1 year.
Yep. 1 year, yeah, when Coach Edwards got there.
Yep.
Cool. All right. What were your like first impressions of him? Was there a moment, you know, first practice, first game, where you're just like, "Wow, this kid can really play"?
Well, you know, obviously when you first meet him, you know, physically he just, you know, he's an imposing man, you know.
Yeah.
And he's big, strong, physical kid. I mean, he just doesn't take you long to figure out who N'Keal Harry is when they talked about him when I took the job. You know, so that's one of the first things that really jumps off the charts at you right off the bat. Big smile, you know, very engaging young man, you know, very well thought of in the valley. You know, he grew up here in the desert, went to high school there, Chandler High School, and, of course, had a decorated career at Arizona State. So you know, tremendously respected guy, stayed at home to play, you know, his college football. And, you know, the people in Tempe and certainly in the Phoenix, greater Phoenix area, appreciate that and respect that in him. So, you know, that was really cool, you know, a guy would, you know, do that because he had options to go anywhere in the country. And, you know, maybe the most heavily recruited high school receiver of his class, I think, 3 years ago. So, you know, he gained immediate respect that way. You know, he, when you look at a big guy, you know, people ask me all the time what's kind of what stands out about him. You know, obviously his physical size is one thing. Certainly for a big kid, he's got great feet. He's really got tremendous feet. And I always look at big receivers if they have the ability to get their feet in the ground and they're light on their feet. When you watch tape of him, he can make you miss. He has a make you miss factor for a big receiver. A lot of guys don't have that at his size. They're more straight line guys, but he does have the ability when the ball is in his hands to make you miss. And I think that's what sets him apart from a lot of the other big receivers, certainly in this group. And certainly something that I feel certain that probably caught the eye of every NFL scout, certainly the Patriots. And then, you know, he's got strong hands. He can come down with a contested catch. He can contort his body to make tough, difficult catches. If you want to call that a 50-50 ball with Nikhil, it's probably more like 90-10 for him. You know, with the balls he came down with the guys going against them. So, you know, those are things that stick out. I've done this a long time. You know, this is almost 40 years for me. Coaching quarterbacks and receivers and been around some great ones along the way at both positions. And, you know, it just doesn't take long when you're around a really good player to figure out, you know, what makes him good, highly competitive, wants to do good, likes to work, you know, and wants to be his best, you know, at practice, you know, if he doesn't do it right or he thinks he can do it better, he'll compete to do it better. And that's a trait of all the really good ones.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about, actually, that you touched on. The first thing was, you know, you mentioned the fact that he's, you know, slippery in the open field. And yes. And that's the first thing that I noticed about him, other than his size, obviously, when I was watching him. And, you know, you've been doing this a long time. I was just curious, I mean, a 6'3" receiver, have you seen a lot of guys that can, you know, make people miss in a phone booth as much as he can?
Well, not at that size. I mean, there's guys that have a make you miss factor. Most of them aren't that big.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not. I mean, I've been around, you know, many, many good ones that have that factor, but not generally at his size. That's the thing that really jumps out at you because, you know, the saying with a receiver is, can he come alive when the ball hits his hands? And that's the thing you notice about Nikhil. He comes alive. And, you know, if you watch the run against Utah, the run against Texas San Antonio, he's got some others, you know, just, but those are ones where he made about five guys best and cut all the way back across the field. And, you know, and then he's got, you know, really good open field speed. You know, he's got what I call competitive speed. You know, timing him in a 40 is one thing, but watching him run on the football field with the balls in his hands and he comes alive, he's got a competitive speed. And I think that's a different type of speed. And then you're dealing with a guy that's 228 pounds and you got to try and tackle that. And that's not easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned also his practice habits. As you know, Coach Belichick is practice pretty important up here. So I was just curious, you know, how is he at practice? Is he a guy that practices like he plays?
Yeah, he's a really good worker. I think the biggest thing that you notice about him in practice, he's very competitive. And he likes to do good. And if something isn't right or he misses a ball or, you know, just misses on a route, you know, he'll go back and get it right, wants to get it right. So he's got those things in him. I think the thing you also got to remember about Nikhil, he's still young. You know, he's just 3 years out of high school. So, you know, the Patriots are getting a really talented receiver, but he's young. And I think maybe just turned 21 or may still be 20. He's not that old. He's somewhere in that range, but 3 years out of Chandler High School. And, you know, people have asked me, a guy the other day asked me about, well, you know, kind of a defining moment in the season, you know, watching him play. And, you know, he had a lot of, you know, obviously big-time plays and like any really top-end receiver would. But, you know, the two plays against USC that stick out to me. And you know, we lost a couple in a row. We had a tough loss to Colorado. And, you know, we needed a win, and we had to go on the road to get it. And you know, over the years, I think Arizona State on the road at USC, you know, hasn't had a lot of success. And I think USC was on like a 20-some-odd game winning streak at home. And we go in there and jump on them right away, and we're up maybe 28-24-3. Nikhil has a big touchdown catch early in the game, and we're rolling along. Well, then they kind of come coming back. They wake up and roar back and take the lead. And we need a play to stem the tide. And, you know, he drifts back and takes a punt and goes 92 yards and kind of catches it over his shoulder. And was that play with Nikhil?
No, he cut off, caught it over his shoulder.
Yeah, when he caught it over his shoulder, you know. And so he caught a punt inside the 10, and you're saying, well, don't know. And then, you know, he reverses his field and now runs the ball down the sideline for 92 yards. and just, you know, we needed a play, and that's what great players do. They make plays. They sense, you know, a play needs to be made to turn the tide. And then late in that game, we're trying to, you know, protect the lead, preserve a lead, go down and put the game away. And that's when he makes that highlight reel tape that most everybody's seen against USC, when he contorted his body against press coverage on a one-on-one fade ball and caught the ball one-handed. I'm sure you've seen that catch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like the one catch that everybody's kind of seen, you know, in Boston already, is that one.
And, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, put an exclamation point on the day, and maybe put an exclamation point, you know, on a big, like what he's been able to do in his Arizona State career is make those kind of plays. And then he follows that up, and, you know, we just absolutely, you know, really get after Utah and play a great game. And, you know, he had a huge game against a really good Utah defense.
Yeah.
You know, had some big plays. And you know, those are things that, like, I remember about guys like him. You know, I had Torrey Holt at NC State, Corn Robinson, and Earl Bennett at Vanderbilt. They make those plays, you know, when they need to be made. And that's who they are. You know, that's what's kind of defined him. He's a very competitive kid, and he likes the big stage. Doesn't bother him. You know, he made big plays against big teams throughout his career here at Arizona State.
Yeah, that's good news, seeing that the Patriots usually play in a few big games or two a year. Wanted to ask you about his, you know, football IQ. And, you know, up here, I think the biggest question is, you know, is he going to be able to get on the same page with Tom Brady? And, and how, you know, it's a complex offense as well, the Patriots run. So how is his, you know, kind of football IQ and his ability to, like, absorb the playbook and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, he's a very great kid. He has a nice football IQ. You know, I think all kids have a learning curve as far as preparation. And I think that will be, you know, I think that's one of those big steps from, you know, being a college player to being a, you know, like a pro's pro, you know, because it's a full-time job. They're not in chemistry and, you know, other classes. And so, you know, that's always a big adjustment, I think, for any college player. There's a few I've had over the years that, you know, from an intelligence standpoint, that's not going to be. He's a very bright kid. And having been in the Patriot system, I was the quarterback coach at Penn State with Bill O'Brien. So I know that, you know, we did all that. And, you know, and it is a challenge. It's a very complex. And it will be a really good challenge for Nikhil, or as it would be for any young rookie. And just like it was for our guys at Penn State when OB came in there. So, but he has all the learning ability, all the skills to get all that. I think it's just more a matter of getting in the building, getting, you know, with it, with their coaches or OC and their wideout coach, and the day-by-day install. He has all of the ability to learn. He's got a good natural. He can talk football with you. He understands football. But with any young player, there's a learning curve. It's going to be different. There's going to be more volume, even more volume thrown at him. We were a no-huddle team. He'll now be in a huddle. And so those things are all, they're all adjustments. But the best kids make those adjustments, and they listen to their coaches, which he does. And but he's got the skills and all the ability to learn football, and he's got a good natural football acumen.
See, were there any option routes in the?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what if you watch those plays throughout the year, we started moving more inside.
Yeah,
and he ran a good many inside routes. So people, well, is he inside or outside? You know, certainly he can play both. He moved all over the place for us. Not a ton of option routes, but certainly, you know, he has an awareness of that. He's been, you know, he's been kind of presented those things where we ran some option routes and things like that. But, you know, more his plays, you know, tremendous downfield catch guy, certainly digs and shallows and crossing routes. And he's made a lot of big plays on those type of things. Made a lot of big plays on verticals, and certainly on the one-on-one matchups outside, he was able to come down with a lot of big catches.
Yeah, absolutely.
But certainly the playbook's going to be opened up. Those option routes and things like that, what they ask him to do, there'll be, you know, some new things opened up to him also.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that he played him inside and outside. Was he playing the X most of the time, or was he?
Yeah. You know, well, he's both because, you know, he played on the left side, so in a no huddle, depending on the hash that you're on, he could have been an X or a Z, certainly college football, because of, you know, the hashes aren't in the middle of the field. So,
right.
You know, that makes it, you know, the strength right or left. So he ended up being an X or Z. He was pretty much always on the left or right. Though this past year, we made it a big adjustment with him and really moved him around. We flipped him from right and left, even in a no huddle scheme. So he was really exposed to moving all over the place, probably as much. I mean, we did that a ton in my past with Earl Bennett. We did it a lot with Holt. And with any really high-level receiver, you've got to do that because otherwise you're just asking them to be able to find you easily. And then about halfway through the year, we really made the decision, even moving that much more inside and get some of those matchups. And he made some big plays inside for us.
Yeah. I think moving him around certainly will be what they do with him here. So that'll be good. Is there one thing in his game that you look at and you say, you know, if he gets that down, then, you know, look out, he's going to, you know.
Well, I always think that the biggest thing is with a young receiver is, you know, two things is the knowledge of the system that allows him to play faster. So as he begins to become more comfortable and knowledgeable in the Patriots system, it doesn't matter where you go or where you play, there's a learning curve to any system or anything you do in life. So that's going to be one factor, certainly, as he becomes more comfortable with the Patriots system, it's going to allow him to even play faster and be more sure and confident of himself. And, you know, he's got all the physical tools. He can catch the ball. You know, certainly there'll be that adjustment to the pro game and playing against, you know, the pro corners and, you know, the route running. I think any young guy, that's a huge factor in their development is their ability to continue to polish their routes and going against the best of the best.
Yeah.
But all the skills are there. He's got, you know, it's obvious. You just watch the tape, you see his skill set.
Yeah.
And he's a big guy doing it. He's not a small guy. So I'm sure the Patriots will experiment, move him around and see what he, you know, how he factors into that system. But you know, he's a big, strong guy. He catches the ball. And again, I think the thing that sets him apart as a big receiver is when he catches the ball, he'd come alive and make you mess. And a lot of big guys are more straight line guys. You know, they can get yards, but they got to go straight ahead to get them. You know, he has the ability to dodge you, make you miss, and then get those extra yards that way. And he's got some good natural open field skills to be able to, you know, cut it back and go against the grain and all those kind of things. So, Patriots certainly got a good one there and a fine young man that, I think it'd be really good community up there. And if you guys, once you're around him, get a chance to spend some time with him, I think you really enjoy him and embrace him.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there one part of his game that you would say is maybe a little bit underrated? I mean, I think everybody knows about the contested catches and the slipperiness.
Yeah, right off the bat, you know, when he gets locked on, you blocking you now, he'll kill you, you know.
Yeah.
When he gets a guy and he gets him under control, you know, because all those little the smaller corners all want to dodge him and kind of out quick him and all that stuff. And you know, when you're in a no huddle offense, there's no break. You know, you're going and going and going and going. So they all try to dodge him and make him miss because he's out there on the field almost all the time. But let me tell you, when he gets locked on him and he gets his balls on him, he gets his hands on him, you know, he can move you now. He's got some competitive strength, natural playing strength, as I like to say. I mean, you look at his body now. He's a strong kid. And so when he gets locked on you, you know, he can move you around. And I know that's not a thing a lot of guys talk about blocking, but he has the ability to do that. I when you say underrated, from a skill set, I just think, a lot of people don't realize how gifted with the ball in his hands he is. The ability just to make you mess as a big kid. And people said, well, who's he remind you of? Who's he like? And the guy that he reminds me of, though he's faster, is Anquan Boldin. That's who he reminds me of. He's got that kind of body, that kind of strength, that kind of power. Anquan could play inside, he could play outside. That's a good, had a good natural feel for the game. And I know there's other guys, Coach Edwards felt like he reminded me of Des Bryant. That's a fair comparison to me, just his game and the way he plays. I think right off the bat, when people asked me that a few months ago, that Anquan Boldin, that's who he reminds me of.
Yeah.
A guy that has a body that's built for, to go the distance. You know, he can take the punishment. He can play inside. He can play outside for you. He's got strong hands. And Anquan Boldin, his 40 time wasn't as fast as Nikhil's. I don't believe it's a combine, but Anquan had that competitive speed. And then he had a natural ability to make you miss and make plays. And that's what the great ones have. And Nikhil has that.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed out his blocking, because the Patriots, if you don't block at receiver here, you don't really play.
Yeah.
That's
the standard you want.
Yeah.
You want guys to be able to play and make plays. And sometimes, they all may miss a block or not, be dialed in on everyone. But, he's a guy that when he gets his hands on you and he's locked on you now, he can move you. He can push you around. He can create some running lanes outside and make it hard for you. Again, you block people with your feet and your hands, and he's got good feet, so he has the ability to stay with you a little bit.
Thanks very much, Coach. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, Evan. Yeah, we're certainly proud of him here, and we all feel like, hey, what a great landing spot for him. Great organization, a winning culture, and an opportunity to be coached by the best.
Yeah, we're happy to have him here. It's pretty exciting. Like I said, they don't usually pick receivers this high. So
when we
get a chance to get our hands on a guy, a stud like Nikhil, it's pretty exciting.
We're looking forward to seeing his development there. And, he's still got, young guy. He's got to just continue to get better.
Thanks, Coach.
All right,
have a good one.
All right, bye-bye.